Welcome to the Capital News. I'm your host, Alex Caritas. Today is Wednesday, March 3rd, 2021. Thank you so much for joining me. Title of today's podcast, America's Infrastructure. We talked about this briefly yesterday. The American Society of Civil Engineers gave us their report card for the health of America's infrastructure. We got a grade of a C-. We'll get to that. That'll be the bulk of today's conversation. Obviously, we want to go through market performance to get that out of the way. Some headlines that came across the wires today, this morning, was with respect to the ADP jobs number. Of course, I don't give a lot of weight to this number. The focus is on the quote-unquote official number that comes from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, which, of course, we will get the jobs report this Friday for the month of February. But the ADP jobs number, I think, came in around 117,000 or so. And market expectations were slightly above 200,000. So that's a big miss. That is a pretty, pretty big miss from what the market was anticipating. And of course, the jobs report for December and January were not good at all. And the revisions were not good at all. So let's hope that that's not going to continue for the month of February when we get those numbers this week, this Friday. But we already know that it's probably not going to be a pretty picture. And the reason is because we continue to see several hundred thousand Americans on a weekly basis continuing to file an initial jobless claim, which remain well above where we were during the depths of the great financial crisis. Where, you know, we have numbers 700,000, 730, 800, 900,000. The GFC, 650, 660,000. And that was for a short period of time. And that was devastating. That was extremely devastating then, just as it would be today. So that just puts it into context. That tells you how devastating and destructive these policies have been. And they're not getting any better. And the other policies that they've enacted fiscally and monetarily are just going to prove ruinous. Yes, things might pick up a little bit once the economy, quote unquote, opens up again. You know, people are going to go back to doing what they did before. But, you know, this hype and this narrative of all of this pent up demand, that's a fairy tale. That's a fairy tale. I mean, all you got to do is stop and think about it. I mean, these are just delayed purchases. If you couldn't take a vacation in 2020, well, now you're just going to take it now in 2021. You still lost it. If you don't go out to restaurants like you used to, you're not going to go out to a restaurant and buy 100 dinners. If your barber or hairstylist has been closed down, or you didn't go every month or as frequently as you used to, you're not going to go and say, yep, you know what, give me 100 haircuts or however many you missed. That's just not how it is going to play out. But the narrative is, of course, going to be everybody's back to normal. Everything's blah, 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 blah. Got to juice the stock market higher. That is going to be the story. And, of course, we don't have true economic growth in this country. Not like we should. Of course, there is production taking place. There is some organic growth taking place. It's a big country, a diverse economy. There's no question about it. But when we are embarking on these fiscal and monetary measures, and we're just flooding the system with liquidity, that ain't growth. Printing money isn't production. But what it is producing is inflation. So when everybody rushes back out into the economy, it'll be interesting to see what these businesses, small, medium, and large, what they do to their customers. Do they attempt to pass on some of these costs? They understand that these people are getting funny money from Uncle Sam. A lot of people are going to get another $1,400 check here in the not too distant future. Say, well, I want some of that money. I've been shut down. The government screwed me over. PPP loans weren't adequate. Ba, 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 ba. Yeah, you know what? Let's raise the prices. That's going to happen anyway, but it's just going to be interesting to see how long it takes for that to come to fruition. Japanese consumer morale hits the strongest point in a year. Ah, but the stock market, Japanese stocks are down 2%. We'll get to that. We have the dollar index trading at 91.01, 91.01. Bitcoin is at $49,500 a coin. Let's see. The biggest moves in the currency market overnight is the Australian dollar gaining 0.6% against the U.S. dollar, and the New Zealand dollar gaining about 0.5% against the greenback. Another red day across the board on Wall Street today. Overnight futures trading, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is giving back 0.25%. The S&P 500 is down 0.5%. And the NASDAQ 100 is giving back 0.2%. Japanese cash trade closed down 2%. Mixed bag across the pond in Europe today. And the Australian cash trade also gave back about 0.8%. Chinese stocks also giving back 2%. And a lot of this is on the concerns of what we noted yesterday, where you have major Chinese regulators coming out and noting that there are bubbles that exist within the system. They even mentioned the Chinese real estate market and how many people are speculating on their real estate market as opposed to making purchases for places to live. Have we learned nothing since the great financial crisis? Evidently, we have not. We know this. In fact, things have gotten that much worse. So when the pendulum swings the other way, it's just going to be that much more destructive. That's just most likely how it's going to play out. On the share price front, Apple gave back 2.5%. Tesla gave back 4.8%, trading at $653 a share. Microsoft giving back 2.7%, Amazon giving back 2.9%, and Facebook giving back 1.4%. However, the banks did decent. Goldman Sachs put on a gain of 1%, and J.P. Morgan Chase putting on a gain of 1.9%. As long as the banks are safe, all is right in the world, so don't worry about it. WTI trading at $61.63 a barrel, Brent $64.48, natural gas $2.79. Gold and silver, not so great a day, but both are up overnight. Gold, $1,719 an ounce. So still flirting with a 16 handle, which we haven't seen in months. And silver is at $26.21 per ounce. So flirting with the 25 handle, which we haven't seen in a while either. And copper is at $4.15 a pound. And to round it out, Uncle Sam's 10-year junk note is currently at 1.46%, so getting close again to that 1.5 figure. Last week, we hit 1.6 intraday, so that's something that obviously central banks are paying close attention to. It all comes down to the narrative, the narrative, the narrative. They are out of ammo. They are trapped. This is it. It's just a question as to will the markets continue to buy the load of BS. I thought this would have happened already. I was optimistic. I guess that makes me foolish or naive or a combination of both. But the markets have bought this stuff hook, line, and sinker, continuing to elevate stock prices to record highs, all-time record valuations across the board. The only thing you can compare these valuations to is 1929, 1937, early 1970s, 2000, the dot-com boom and bust, in the great financial crisis. I mean, those periods in time did not end well. Now, maybe this time will be different, but I highly doubt it. The only thing that's likely going to be different is this is going to be that much worse, and it's probably going to take a lot longer for all of the malinvestment to really rid itself through the system. This is going to be a tough decade, I believe. I take no pleasure in saying that, but this is just what I see. We have pulled and have stolen so much future growth and prosperity just to fill a void today. Well, where's that going to come from? Where's the growth for tomorrow going to come from? And the growth of the year after that? Where is it going to come from? This is going to end miserably. And some of the breaks, some of the cracks in the system that I think are going to be the signs that we really start to see this shift in the narrative breaking down is global yields rising. That's why this is a topic of discussion. That's why this is important. This is why central banks are acting. This is why the Reserve Bank of Australia threw $6 billion into the system over a few days to get these yields back down. It's why the ECB is saying, we're going to do what it takes. This is why you have some members now of the Federal Reserve saying, yeah, it happened. It caught our attention. It caught our attention. So it's going to be interesting to see what Jay Powell, chair of the Federal Reserve, and others, but mainly the Fed chair, what he has to say in about a week and a half, 2 weeks' time, on the conclusion of the FOMC meeting. It's going to be more BS. It's going to be more narrative. And of course, this will follow. Their FOMC meeting will follow the official jobs report that comes out this Friday. And of course, Jay Powell has already said, well, yeah, the official number is 6.3% according to the BLS, but the real number is closer to 10%. So he's already dismissing this government figure, which is extremely rare, which is why I continue to mention this to the audience, because it's very important, because they are shifting, because they know they are out of ammo. They know they are running out of runway. End of story. That's why the Chinese regulators are coming out and saying there's bubbles everywhere, and if there's spillover effect from the Europeans in the U.S. that spills over into China, well, guess what, folks in China? It's not our fault. It was the bubbles that the Americans caused. It was the bubbles that the Europeans caused. It is the blame game. Then you bring into consideration the weakest links, the inflation, some almost hyperinflation in some countries, really, the destruction, the continuation of protests and riots. Yeah, it's not a good recipe. And of course, virtually none of this is discussed in the American press, in the American media. Why would it? Got to distract the idiots in this country with a bunch of nonsense, because if they really were paying attention to what was going on, they would understand that they're getting ripped off, that their future growth and prosperity is being stolen from them. You know, it was interesting. I came across a tweet today where somebody who I follow on Twitter for a lot of financial know-how, some technical analysis, this, that, and the other, put something there, real succinct. 2011, Occupy Wall Street. 2021, everybody joins Wall Street. It's basically, you know, just a complete 180 from only a decade ago. Everybody was blaming Wall Street for the economic woes. Now everybody wants to be a day trader. Isn't that amazing? All it took was 10 years and trillions of dollars to be flushed into the system that is going to rob us blind of future growth and prosperity. But there you have it. So onward to the infrastructure report card again from the American Society of Civil Engineers. You can find this online at infrastructurereportcard.org. Infrastructurereportcard.org. Google it. ASCE, it'll come up, you can find it. Very in-depth, a lot to read, a lot to study. We're going to go through a couple of the grades. We might look at energy, drinking water, schools, and transit, depending on the time. But again, we have a C- overall grade, and this is one of the best grades that we've actually ever had since they have been running these report cards, I think since 1998. We've always been D, D plus, D minus. So the fact that we have a C minus, okay, finally making some headway. But as far as I'm concerned, that's still pathetic for what's supposed to be the greatest country on the face of the earth. So here's just some overviews right here on their homepage. There is a water main break every 2 minutes. A water main break every 2 minutes, and an estimated 6 billion gallons of treated water lost each day in the U.S., enough to fill over 9,000 swimming pools. Wrap your head around that. Just think of how much economic loss is experienced because of this. Growing wear and tear on our nation's roads have left 43% of our public roadways in poor or mediocre condition, a number that has remained stagnant over the past several years. And there are 30,000 miles of inventoried levees across the U.S. and an additional 10,000 miles of levees whose location and condition are unknown. Doesn't that make you sleep well at night, especially if you're somewhere where there's a lot of water, hurricane action, what have you? So briefly, I'm going to go over the categories that exist here within the report card. So just bear with me as we go through them, and then we'll dig deeper into energy, drinking water, schools, and transit. And if we have time, maybe some others. But aviation received a grade of D+. Bridges, C. Dams, D. Drinking water, C-. Energy, C-. Hazardous waste, D+. Doesn't that make you feel safe and cozy? Inland waterways, D+. Levees, D. Public parks, D+. That's hard to believe. Public parks, a D+. Ports, a B-. So that's decent. Rail, a B. That's decent. Roads, a D, as in dog. Schools, D+. Solid waste, a C+. Stormwater, a D. Transit, a D-. And wastewater, a D+. We've got a public health safety crisis going on. And ain't it fantastic that our wastewater receives a grade of D+. Schools, a D+. I'm going to have to look up the Department of Education to see what the average grade of the average high school graduate is. I bet it's close to a D plus, if I had a guess. But let's take a look at energy. Again, a grade of C minus. This is their overview. In a digital connected world, Americans increasingly rely on readily available and uninterrupted electricity. Over the last 4 years, transmission and distribution and reliability focused pipeline investments have increased, and outages have declined slightly. Annual spending on high voltage transmission lines grew from $15.6 billion in 2021 to $21.9 billion in 2017, while annual spending on distribution systems, quote, the last mile of the electricity network, grew 54% over the past two decades. Utilities are taking proactive steps to strengthen the electric grid through resilience measures. However, weather remains an increasing threat. Obviously, we had that poor case of that in Texas. Among 638 transmission outage events reported from 2014 to 2018, severe weather was cited as the predominant cause. All right, and here they give a breakdown of some of the highlights. Transmission spending grew from $15.6 billion in 2012 to $21.9 billion in 2017, as stated. And then they give a breakdown further of where the energy actually comes from. So natural gas is responsible for about 38.4%. Coal is responsible for 23.5%. Nuclear at 19.7%. Petroleum at 0.5%. And renewable sources at 17.5%. Now it's interesting, isn't it, that coal number coming in so high there. Well, you would think that would be high at 23.5%. I mean, all the talk that you hear that coal is dead and all of these regulations and coal plants shutting down. Coal is very, very available in this country. It is very cheap, and it works very well. So they can, the politicians and regulators can talk all they want about coal going away, maybe someday, but not anytime soon, because it's readily available, it's cheap, and it works. So that's why that number remains at 23.5%. And we highlighted this, too, in our book, The Cynic's Guide to Investing. And 5 years ago, 6 years ago when this book came out, I'm sure that number was a little bit higher because natural gas has eaten in to some of the coal capacity, as have renewables. But still, coal works. All right, let's go back. That's energy. And, of course, there is a ton more information there. But I just want to highlight some of these things that I think, of course, I find interesting. And obviously, it's all crucial. But these are some of the things that I think, obviously, we all need. So now we're on to drinking water. Here's the overview. Our nation's drinking water infrastructure system is made up of 2.2 million miles. 2.2 million miles of underground pipes that deliver safe, reliable water to millions of people. Unfortunately, the system is aging and underfunded. There is a water main break every 2 minutes and an estimated 6 billion gallons of treated water lost each day, as we stated previously. However, there are signs of progress as federal financing programs expand and water utilities raise rates to reinvest in their networks. It is estimated that more than 12,000 miles of water pipes were planned to be replaced by drinking water utilities across the country in 2020 alone. In 2019, about a third of all utilities had a robust assessment or asset management program in place to help prioritize their capital and operations maintenance investments, which is an increase from 20% in 2016. So some investment being made in the right direction, but it's quite amazing, isn't it? 2.2 million miles of pipe. Now, here's what they note with respect to condition and capacity. Access to clean and safe drinking water is critical to public health and economic prosperity. And on average, people use around 82 gallons of water per person per day in the United States. I'll repeat that. On average, people use around 82 gallons of water per person per day in the United States. Nearly half of water utilities report declining or flat total water sales in the past 10 years, largely due to efficiency improvements. That's a good thing. Water usage dropped 3% from 2010 to 2015, despite a 4% increase in the nation's total population. Due to declining water usage, there is currently adequate drinking water capacity in the U.S. About 39 billion gallons of water a day are withdrawn from surface water or groundwater sources for public supply. Public supply use represents about 12% of total freshwater withdrawal. So that 82 gallons per person per day here in the U.S. is a lot higher than what I had anticipated. But obviously, people are using a lot of water. I guess it kind of makes sense with everything that goes on within a typical household. Okay, so that's drinking water. Again, a ton more information exists on all of these topics. What, you know, spending gaps, funding gaps, how much it's going to take to get all of these levels up to a B plus, an A, whatever it's going to take. And of course, we mentioned yesterday, these numbers are going to differ. You get 10 different experts in a room, you're probably going to get 10 different bids. But nonetheless, it's going to be in the trillions of dollars across all of these metrics that we're looking at here. So it's just amazing. We are definitely behind the eight ball on this. It's a travesty, but it's really par for the course when you just take into consideration the current climate and the climate that's been in existence here in this country for decades with respect to our, you know, politicians at the local, state, and federal level. Okay, so this is what happens. And again, the only good thing at this juncture, if we take it seriously and actually do this right, is the fact that we do have, you know, near record low interest rates. So lock this stuff in to finance it. That's really the only good thing in all of this with these low interest rates. Because we're in such disrepair, this is the way we can take advantage of it. At least one way. This is schools. Again, a grade of D plus. School facilities represent the second largest sector of public infrastructure spending. Something I did not know. After highways. And yet there is no comprehensive national data source on K through 12 public school infrastructure. What data is available indicates that 53% of public school districts report the need to update or replace multiple building systems, including HVAC systems, your heating and air conditioning. More than one-third of public schools have portable buildings due to capacity constraints, with 45% of these portable buildings in poor or fair condition. I would imagine what they're meaning by portable buildings is probably a trailer or something like that. Meanwhile, as a share of the economy, state capital funding for schools was down 31% in fiscal year 2017 compared to 2008. That is equivalent to a cut of $20 billion. And of course, schools are important, as they note. Public schools often serve a secondary function as emergency shelters and community resource facilities during man-made or natural disasters, and facility upgrades are needed to effectively fulfill this important community purpose. So here are some of the highlights. There are approximately 84,000 public schools with nearly 100,000 buildings in the United States. It's a huge piece of the economy. Construction, maintenance, huge piece. And obviously, for education, the students, the teachers, the faculty. It's a big part of the economy. Nearly 41% of schools reported issues with HVAC systems, and 4 in 10 public schools do not have a long-term facility plan. So that's just dereliction of duty, incompetence, par for the course. So I guess it's no surprise that they received a grade of D plus. Let's take a look at transit, getting a grade of D minus. So here's their overview. Public transit is essential to everyday living in communities across the country, providing access to jobs, schools, shopping, healthcare, and other services, while enabling equitable access and sustainable mobility options. Unfortunately, 45% of Americans have no access to transit. Meanwhile, much of the existing system is aging, and transit agencies often lack sufficient funds to keep their existing systems in good working order. Over a 10-year period across the country, 19% of transit vehicles and 6% of fixed guideway elements like tracks and tunnels were rated in poor condition. Currently, there is a $176 billion transit backlog, a deficit that is expected to grow to more than $270 billion through 2029. Meanwhile, transit ridership is declining, a trend compounded by the COVID-19 pandemic. Failure to address the transit revenue shortfall will only exacerbate ridership declines, as service cuts mean that trip delays and reliability issues become more frequent. This stands to increase congestion, hamper the economy, and worsen air quality in the coming year. So that's interesting how they bring up the decrease in ridership due to COVID-19. Now, of course, the best solution to all of this is to allow market forces to decide what's best. Electric vehicles, increased investment in public transportation. What's the case? I mean, regardless, this country should have better rails. It should have bullet trains connecting major cities across this country. But we don't. We're not anywhere near close to that point. But we've had this conversation before where, yeah, everybody wants to talk big on renewable sources of energy, going green, electric vehicles. But how much more mining is going to have to take place for all of those metals and minerals and everything else that's going to have to be mined out of the earth to produce these vehicles? Because they require a lot more copper and a lot more other rare earth minerals. Okay, so how green is this going to be at the end of the day? And if you have that type of demand, coupled with all of these liquidity injections, where do you think prices are going to go? So are these car companies, are they going to be able to sell new cars profitably? Are they even going to be able to sell them? Is there going to be the demand for them out there? These obviously remain unknowns, but they're big questions to ponder. These are some of the highlights of transit over the last two decades. 52 new systems and 124 extensions have opened. Buses operate on over 226,000 miles of streets and roads. Commuter and hybrid railroads operate over a combined 9,227 miles. Okay, so there you have it. And then, of course, the best grades that were received were with rail, overall rail, so your railroads, and ports. Ports coming in at a B minus, rail at a B. And that's most likely, I can speak for railroads, because there's a lot of private investment that takes place with railroads. Those major train lines, that's their stuff. That's their business. They want to make sure that their railways are in tip-top shape. And so they put their money where their mouth is because that's where it needs to go. I don't know if that's the same situation for ports, but it very well might be, which is why they have a grade of B minus. But nonetheless, those are your best grades. Everything else is at a C or worse. Okay, so again, the overall report card for 2021 is a C minus. The next time we receive their report card will be 4 years from now, 2025. Let's hope that that's moved up to a B minus or a B plus. But it's going to take some leadership. It's going to take some vision from our fearless leaders in Washington, D.C., in our state capitals, in our town halls, or our city halls, I should say. So get with it, pay attention. And of course, the sad thing is, yes, we might have low interest rates to finance this, but we don't have the money. We don't have the money. But it is an investment. It is needed. If it's done right, it can pay dividends. Okay, it's not all doom and gloom here. If things are done right, our best days could be ahead of us. But I just don't see much of that right now from the people who are in power. I just don't hear it. It's more divide and conquer tactics. It's more blame the Republicans, blame the Democrats, and that's it. Let's ram one bill after another, hundreds of billions, trillions of dollars that we don't have into the system. Can't afford it, but who cares? Blame the Democrats, blame the Republicans when we have real problems. Got to get our act together. But there you have it, America's infrastructure, C minus. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.